Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's going to do it? You? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago, and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. The death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
You think President Obama is thinking he could say that to somebody right now? I doubt it. I doubt it. I played that for Brian Terry. Defending our freedom. And, you know, a lot of times people have failed to recognize that that's what Brian Terry was doing when he was shot and killed. Sadly, though, the Obama administration doesn't seem to recognize that.
They can't even remember the kid's name.
It's Reese on the radio. We are live 2 minutes after the hour right here on Therapy Thursday, June the 21st, 2012. The number is 347-308-8701. The Obama administration is doing everything to cover its own ass. It's that simple. Nobody can dispute it. Executive privilege is a clear example of that. To show you how concerned they are about their own hides and not paying attention to the focus of this investigation, came directly from the White House press secretary today, as he was asked by Jake Tapper of ABC News about this.
The family of Brian Terry, the slain Border Patrol agent at whose murder scene at least two of these guns were found, they disagree with your characterization about these investigations. They say that the Attorney General's refusal to fully disclose the documents associated with Fast and Furious and President Obama's assertion of executive privilege serves to compound the tragedy. It denies the Terry family and the American people the truth. That's a statement from the Terry family lawyer.
Well, look, we absolutely agree with the need to find out the truth about why Fast and Furious happened, why the tactic that, again, was employed in the previous administration and different operations and was stopped by this attorney general, why it came about. And that's why the attorney general referred it to inspector general. That is why we have provided Congress every document that pertains to the operation itself that is at issue here when you talk about the family that you referred to. And
the Terry family.
He didn't even know the Border Patrol agent's name. The family that you referred to. They don't even pay attention to what this is all about. It's the murder of a federal agent. That was clearly based upon a botched operation, that, which, by the way, they keep mentioning the Bush administration about this. Wide receiver. We'll get into that. Now, I've been killing this story for the past 2-3 days. This is the third day. Trust me, I've got plenty of news to get into. I just want to make a couple of notes in this first break about Fast and Furious, and then we'll move on. Because trust me, we've got a bigger story to deal with. Trust me, we've got a bigger story to deal with. And when you hear this story and you listen to this video that's coming up, I promise you, you will be stunned. But let's get back into this. I'd like to thank our good friend, friendly neighborhood white man, Mike in Florida, who sent me a tweet a little while ago about an article by CBS News and Cheryl Atkinson, who's been covering Fast and Furious from the beginning. She broke the story, only proving exactly what it is that I've been saying for the longest. Demand letter number 3. Which now CBS has obtained documents that prove that the ATF in this administration was using gun shops to promote a narrative that would address the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. That they were using gun shops to villainize, let's just say, to make them look bad. To criminalize these gun shops in 5 states. Arizona, New Mexico, Texas. To name 3. That they were going after these gun shops and these gun shows to besmirch their name, to promote a narrative, to go after the Second Amendment. And there are emails that were obtained by CBS News where these gun shops showed concern. Listen, we want to help you guys in the ATF and your investigation and what it is that you're doing, but we're concerned about how many guns are leaving our shops. You know, we want to do the best thing for you. We want to help our... One gun shop owner said, look, I'm concerned about whether or not these guns are going south of the border and they're going into criminal hands. I've got friends who are Border Patrol agents. I'm worried about this. You read the emails yourself. Just look it up. The title of it reads, Documents ATF Used Fast and Furious to Make the Case for Gun Regulations. CBS News investigates. And of course, nobody at the Justice Department is speaking. They know they're caught. They know they're busted. There were plenty of other things afoot about this. I have to go into this. Good old Reverend Al. You knew he was going to say something. And... Is Reverend Al naive or stupid? I'm going to go with the latter on this one.
Ignorant.
Probably a little bit of both. Or all 3 for that matter. This is Reverend Al Sharpton. I think he's talking about Trayvon Martin or some other garbage. But he injects a little bit of Eric Holder into the conversation he has. Now, they cut off whoever the knucklehead is with him on the air, who says that's right at the end of this speech, but I'd like you to hear it for yourself. Here's Reverend Al, complete moron.
Since I was a preteen, at 12 years old, I was youth director of New York Breadbasket. When we have 4 cases of police brutality through the history of our movements all the way to National Action Network, people said we were making it up until Rodney King. The reason Rodney King is significant is how he was beaten and how it was captured removed the denial of America of what police would do. Not only what they did, but the fact they did it with no abandon showed that they're used to doing it. Not all police, not even most police, but those that do had to be held accountable.
Forgive me. He is talking about Rodney King and his relevance in history. That's what he's talking about. Rodney King, of course.
And the fact that he was a flawed man that had to fight his own demons, I think added to the human factor that it's ordinary people that face these extraordinary inequalities. So Rodney King is a civil rights symbol. He's a human rights victim. He never tried to be a leader. He just tried to plead with America to deal with the rights of ordinary people. As we deal with racial profiling and stopping and frisking, it has to be dealt with from the streets with a Rodney King all the way to the congressional halls where they're trying to stop and frisk Eric Holder today, the Attorney General of the United States. There are different rules based on who it is, and we've got to fight until there's equal protection under the law and we deal with everybody with one standard. You're right.
Eric Holder is being stopped and frisked. That's what Reverend Al says. Eric Holder is being stopped and frisked. Now, I want to take a comparison here. People walking through urban neighborhoods who are stopped by police officers are suspected of wrongdoing. Just because a neighborhood is a high-risk neighborhood for crime. It's unjustified for this to happen in this day and age. As I've always said, this is like a Russian Gestapo. This is like the Germans during, you know, before World War II. This is like being in China, some communist country where you could just stop a person on the street and stop and frisk them. What happened here with Eric Holder? Is Eric Holder being stopped and frisked for no reason? They don't care. Those on the left do not care that Brian Terry was killed. They don't care. And they don't care that this operation was something that they put forward to push a narrative that's more important than anything. Not how it was botched, not the fact that it was botched, and not that a murder took place. And people keep mentioning George W. Bush. This operation happened in 2006 under the Bush administration. This operation happened under Bush in 2006. Bush ran this operation in 2006. That's all people seem to be saying. But here's the difference. When George W. Bush's administration and the ATF walked guns, it was called Operation Wide Receiver. What did the Bush administration do, or the people in charge during the Bush administration do? They connected with the Mexican government, hatched out a plan. We're going to send about 300 guns down there, and we're going to try to trace the guns and see if it'll lead us to cartels and see if it'll get us some arrest. They followed every gun. They retrieved every gun. It garnered no arrest. It bore no fruit. Operation didn't work. Stopped the program. Kept it moving. They kept the Mexican government in tune with everything it is that they were doing. In fact, no one's ever alleged that the ATF under the Bush administration did anything wrong, or there was any wrongdoing, or that there were any deaths. Now, everyone knew that the idea failed. Everyone knew that wide receiver was not a success. That was just 300 guns. What the hell would make this administration send over 2,500 of them and then lose 75% of them? And then try to throw this on the Bush administration. It would be like saying, you know, that Bush, man, he did the Iraq war. That bastard, he started the Iraq war. He sent those troops in. He had no exit strategy. He didn't put boots on the ground long, you know, soon enough. Didn't start the surge. We're going to do the same damn thing that he did in Iraq, and we're going to do it in Syria. But we're going to send more troops, and we're going to follow the same tactics. But this time, instead of a strategy, let's just not send field generals out there. Let's do the same damn thing to see if we can do it better. But with less support. And then say, hey, Bush did it. Knowing that it failed. Another blame Bush policy that is being literally, it looks stupid. It looks stupid for this administration to even try to suggest it. But they're trying it. Everyone continues to repeat it over and over again. Bush did it in 2006, but it failed. Bush did it in 2006, but it failed. What made you do it in 2009? 3 years later. And how's that Bush's fault? The executive privilege has now drawn more attention towards the Obama administration. None of the major networks are covering it. They don't want to touch this. They can't touch it. Because they figure, hey, you know what? If we don't report it, the audience doesn't know it's news. But what they fail to realize is that no one's watching them. The ratings are slumping. Their credibility is shot. And dedicating 19 seconds to the story, for some odd reason, they think that no one's paying attention. The world is watching. Everyone is watching. Alternative media is bigger and broader than it's ever been. It is in our daily lives. Alternative media is doing the job that mainstream media just won't do. So they can turn a blind eye to it. But they'll be shocked at the results. And people are going to ask, hey, why didn't you guys report this? And their credibility will continue to be shot. They do this literally at their own, literally at their own risk. And they know it. Because there are guys like Al Sharpton who's not following the mission. You see, while alternative media and stations like Fox News are ramping this story up and constantly covering it, guys like Al Sharpton on MSNBC have got to constantly push against that narrative. They've got to push against the truth. And they'll talk about it while the rest of the mainstream media refuses to touch it. And by him bringing attention to it, everybody knows what's happening. If they don't know, now they know. Don't think the black community cares? They know now. Al Sharpton's talking about it. Steve Harvey knows that Eric Holder is facing a contempt charge. He finds this racist. He's going to talk about it so more people will know. So they're only helping bring attention to the story. Think about that for a little while. You're not helping by not reporting. I know you think you're helping the Obama administration by not reporting it, but you're not. And this is going to be a very, very horrible thing for this administration. He won't be reelected, folks. He won't be. Scandal after scandal, after issue, it's turning into week after week of bad news for this administration. Week after week, jobless numbers, the stock market plummeting another 250 points today. NASDAQ took a dive of 70-plus points. The unemployment rate right now is already set to stay at 8.2% for the rest of the year. It's already been reported. It will not be below 8%. Ben Bernanke just gave that announcement. The numbers look bleak. Things will not change. And the president's record will show, and every other scandal that is on that will only pile on and pile on and pile on. And as soon as somebody gets the idea, if they really start paying attention to this, and I'm hoping that the Romney campaign or somebody at the RNC or possibly somebody at these GOP super PACs starts getting the message. Start talking about the hundreds of Mexicans who were killed using guns that this president's administration allowed to walk into their country and put in the hands of the people that millions are trying to escape. That they actually are culpable in handing their enemies guns to kill them. Find a way to put that in a YouTube commercial or any commercial. Get that out there. Make the Latino vote question this administration on how it really feels about Latinos in this country, especially the Mexican community. All you have to do, I mean, come on. This is a direct link to the Department of Justice culpable in murders across the border. Just to promote an agenda in this country. Hundreds were sacrificed for it. You were set upon. That's right, your citizens, your people back home were set upon by this Department of Justice, used as pawns. And just ask those voters, those potential voters, those potential supporters, does this look like a caring administration that doesn't even want to get to the bottom of these deaths and are protecting people's jobs for it? Protecting people's jobs to get to the truth? Or to avoid getting to the truth, I should say. Make them ask themselves that question. It's the only way you're going to get the administration to have to respond. That's the way you get them to respond. It's the only way you can. Link them to it. Because they clearly are linked. That's the only thing I could possibly tell them to do. Let's take a call. Our number is 347-308-8701. Let's see who's on the line. Who's on the line with us today? Is this Edward?
Yeah, this is Edward.
Hey, what's up, Edward? How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. What do you think about linking this administration to those murders in Mexico?
I think they're totally linked. I mean, you can't, you know, they instituted this Fast and Furious program. You know, they, you know, they're as guilty as the people who pull the trigger, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, JC is making a statement. JC, get on the line. I want to hear what you have to say about this. You're going to have to defend this comment that you put on the board. I want you to defend this. You there? Hold on. All right, you there?
And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Hold on. This man is now showing heart for people that normally he wouldn't give a damn about because they're trying to jump the borders to get into this country illegally. And now that it fits your narrative, the narrative that you're supporting about the current president of the United States, all of a sudden now you have a heart. I mean, you can't have it both ways.
Well, wait. The only thing that I'm opposed to, JC, is
let me correct myself. And I'm not talking about those that are defending the borders. I'm just talking about those that want to cross it.
Oh, no, I know what you're talking about. But let's put that in a perspective then. Since you're suggesting that these are people that I don't care about normally, and now I have some sort of bleeding heart for them, well, let me explain this to you. Okay? Very simple. The people who were being killed in Mexico are not border jumpers. Those are private and innocent citizens being killed in their own country. Now, as far as those crossing the border, what is my anecdote for those who are caught crossing this border illegally? Shoot them? Or they deserve to die? That's never been my narrative. My narrative is, you don't belong here, go back. Send them back. I want no amnesty for you. Go back. If you broke the law, you go back. Never has it been the position of Reese on the radio that these people have ever deserved to die. I said they don't deserve the privilege of being in this country illegally under any order. What I'm
saying, No. I didn't say that. I didn't say that Reese on the radio states that feel that they should die. No, not at all. It's like all of a sudden we have a heart for them, and it's like.
Why wouldn't I have a heart for them dying innocently, given having guns given to people who want to use them, right? People who want to use them as drug mules, right? They threaten their families, they kidnap their citizens, right? They do all of those things. We're talking about drug cartels, drug lords. We're talking about kidnappers. We are arming each and every one of those people to do harm to human life, period. Forget about them being in Mexico. The bottom line is that here is an administration who is making these pleas to them that saying, see, we care about you. We want you to live in this country. We care about you poor and indentured servants of your poor, horrible communities. And we want to give you free passage into the country. At the same time, we will use you to promote a narrative of gun control, even at the expense of your life. This is hypocritical. I've never been a hypocrite about my position on illegals. Send them back. But you'll never hear me say that these people, although they want to be in this country, deserve to be shot at the border by cartel members and kidnappers because they refuse to package and bring their wares into the United States. And here's an administration that actively put guns in the hands of those people who did just that. So how do I have a bleeding heart or I'm some sort of way a hypocrite? I'm not a hypocrite. I'm saying
human life
is human life.
No. I'm not saying anything with regards to killing them as they come across the border. But normally it's like you have a whole totally different stance where it relates to them and them being in this country illegally.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree. Hold on. I agree that this administration, their hands are dirty with regards to this entire situation. And I believe that the only reason why he signed that sweeping legislation the other day was basically not so much to wag the dog, but more so to wag the burrito. To draw attention from it, but he busted. You know what I mean?
Right, but see, again, but this was nothing more than pandering, and this is why I say that this is why I believe that these GOP groups, you know, these super PACs should draw attention to the pandering. You have to look at the contrast. It's important to look at the contrast. Here is a guy who just last week pandered to you by saying he's going to allow amnesty to a group of your constituents, a particular group, illegals, who came here by no fault of their own. But on the other hand, he was willing to allow his administration to run guns to a cartel who is out there killing you in an unmerciful way, without prejudice, They are out there killing you. So you have to pose the question to these people. Do you believe that this administration is genuine about your needs? Even if they were willing to go this far, that it would cost your fellow citizens back home their lives? It's a sharp contrast. And if you promote that, if you push that in their faces and make them look at it for what it is, you have to make them ask the question, yeah, Obama, what's the deal here, man? Why would you be protecting an attorney general who did that to our people? Even though Mexicans or whatever group come to this country to build a better life, they still have a strong, strong root to their home. In fact, most of them, when they come into America and they make their money, I think they send like $2 of every $3 that they make here back to their people in Mexico. So they're definitely secured in who it is that they are and where it is that they're from. They're in this country dodging police and dodging border patrol to build a better life for their people at home. So, again, this would sit well with them or sit badly with them if they knew, wait a minute, man, those could have been some of my family members that you put in harm's way. I think that's a fair assessment. Edward, I mean, tell me, is that a fair way to line it out?
Yeah,
I agree with you. I agree with you.
Go ahead, Edward. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I just want to put a little comment out there that at one point in Mexico, behind oil and tourism, money coming in from the United States was their highest amount of income.
Well, yeah.
This was about...
Exactly. Mexico is our number two oil importer, but just behind Canada. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Number three. I apologize. Because it's Canada, Saudi Arabia, and Mexico. Mexico's number three, and our oil providers. So yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't even realize that. Everybody always says it's like, oh, we get more oil than anywhere else. No, but we get a crap load of our oil from our north and south neighbors. Canada and Mexico, respectively. So a lot of people don't seem to remember that. You know, but I just want to make that point. That, look, if you really want to make – you want to make this a point, you don't – again, it's not so much about what it is that you have to prove. Take the evidence for what it is. Was there gun running under Fast and Furious under this administration? Yes. Are there documents that prove that this administration was trying to promote a narrative or an agenda of stricter gun laws in this country? Yes. Were those guns used to kill innocents in Mexico? Yes. That's all you need. And you put that out to the American people and even those who are here who are going to be voting based on party lines and their support of what they think is a pandering Democratic Party. And you put this in their minds and you say, look, here are the facts. You deal with them. Is this the administration you believe cares about your needs, or are they just pandering to you when they need you? And that's it. I would do the same thing with the African-American community. This administration cares about you? 13.5% unemployment. That's all I would have to say. Look at the facts. And then when they have to ask, well, what do you want me to do, vote for Romney? The question is, you want to vote for more of that? That's all you have to ask him. Put them in a position where they have to ask themselves a question. Yeah, you know what, Obama, I'm going to have to ask you. You know what, I really don't want to vote for Romney, but you know what, you're going to have to step up and explain to me what's the deal. Why are African Americans the highest unemployment rate in this country, and why is it the highest since the 80s? Why is teen unemployment this summer higher since World War II? You're going to have to put this out there. That's the message. And right now, they put their collective foot in their mouths behind this scandal, and that executive privilege can be used to expose it. People are looking at this saying, we're never ever going to get the documents. We're never ever going to find out what went on. We're never ever going to get to the bottom of this. But you know what? The idea is to get them out of office. Get this administration out of office. Stop the destruction now. And the only way to do it is make the American people see every day what's happening. I'll take a break. We come back. We got a bigger story about white guilt. And when I tell you, this is the most insane thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
I tell you the stuff that I have just been reading and listening to.
I'm so glad you've been doing. Mary has been doing extensive research on this. This affected her, as of course, you know, our resident white woman in the house. This affects her personally. And when we come back, we're going to talk about it. It's white guilt like you've never seen it before. And trust me, you are going to be stunned. You'll be stunned. Because I'm still... We read about this sometime this morning. We're still freaking out. It's Restarted Radio. Stick around. Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the radio, and you'd be stunned at some of the people who call up to spend some time with Reese on the radio. He is the godfather of entertainment, Mr. Michael Lohan. Mr. Lohan!
Reese, I have to stop laughing before we continue. I don't know how to respond to this. Am I in the Twilight Zone?
you are in the Twilight Zone. On the phone with us right now on Reese on the Radio is the connoisseur of the Hollywood biz, the father of the famed actress Lindsay Lohan. Mr. Michael Lohan is on the show on Reese on the Radio. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
No, thanks for having me, Reese. It's going to be a lot of fun, I can tell already.
Oh, man, you have no idea how much fun we're going to have today. It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mary, Mary, why you bugging?
James, you're on the air?
Yep.
Before you say anything, you are just going to come clean right now, okay? I'd like to know the adult beverage you're enjoying.
Beverage? Yeah, I'm drinking beer.
What kind of beer are you drinking, James? Is it a 211?
Oh, yes.
You're drinking a 211?
Yes.
You're drinking 211 Steel Reserve.
Right now.
The reason why it's called Steel Reserve and it's called 211 for that matter is that the police code 211 means robbery in progress.
And don't let me tell you what that 211 has stolen from you tonight, my man.
It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
That our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward. And the state of our union is strong.
3 years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours, a great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on ReSun Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com. What is a boy to do?
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I-L-O-V-E.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
blogtalkradio.com. All right, we're only going to tease most of what it is that we're going to talk about, but I need to, I guess we should just go into it. We'll go into the last, what is it, 17 minutes. Okay. So, Drudge Report put up this story today about the University of Minnesota in Duluth. It says, university sponsors campaign to undermine white privilege. They're now sponsoring an ad campaign designed to achieve racial justice by raising awareness of white privilege. The project disseminates its message that society was set up for us, or whites, and as such is unfair. Through an aggressive campaign of online videos, billboards, and lectures, the ads feature a number of Caucasians confessing their guilt for the supposed privilege that comes along with their fair features. The group says it's unfair to be white.
Here, and wait till you hear what Peggy has to say.
Just listen to this audio. I don't even know how to. I don't even know how to describe it.
What do you mean we're lucky to be white?
It's not luck, it's privilege. We're privileged that people see us, not a color.
Privilege that we don't get stared at when we walk into the room.
Privilege that we don't get followed by security when we go shopping or pulled over when we're in the wrong neighborhood.
We're privileged because society was set up for us and our silence keeps it in place.
We're privileged and that's unfair.
And it's called the Unfair Campaign. You can, of course, go to their website at unfaircampaign.org.
And please do, because it is. If you want a good laugh, I'm telling you, you need to visit the site.
Now, hold on. They've got all of these pictures. Some of the billboards just read. They have white people with these sort of handwritten messages on their faces.
In black.
In black. Let me read you what some of them read. In fact, on the feature page of this one white girl, boy, can't really tell.
I don't know.
It's very difficult to tell. It's a very unisex-looking individual, and with the writing on their face, you can't really tell if it's a man or a woman. But anyway, one writing says, "We're lucky we're white. Lucky to be the majority. We're lucky we're seen as normal. We're lucky we don't get followed by security when we go to the store. We're lucky car doors don't get locked when we walk by.
Wow.
We're lucky that it's easier to get a job, a bank loan, and approval in general." And then on the side it reads, "If you see racism, speak up, break the silence." Now, I've got one thing to say about this, and I'm going to let Mary go on a tear as a white woman, because I think it's only appropriate that you discuss this. I'm going to let you take over the show. It's the Mary, Mary, Why You Bugging show after I make this one claim. First of all, this group, these groups of whites, let me explain to you.
Oh, it's not just groups of whites.
Oh, no. I know there are black groups that are a part of it. But I want to talk about these groups of whites that are involved in here. Because there's a guy by the name of Lenny Black. He's a white guy and a professor at this school. Let me just explain something about these white folks. Okay? This is exactly what I've always said about liberals. Especially liberal whites. They've already condemned you for the color of your skin. Flat out. You're black. You don't get what I get. You don't have the promise that I have. You're black. The fact that one of the people in here say, I can go shopping. We can go shopping without being followed by security. Means that all of you do. And that's how they see you. My favorite one on here is, "We get seen as normal. We're lucky we're seen as normal. You're not seen as normal." Now you think that these are white people who are understanding your pain? No, they're not. This isn't not an understanding of your pain. This is a proclamation that you're different, and they know it. And they don't want you to be different anymore. We've sat idly by and allowed you to be different. And we said nothing. Not because they know other people have done it, because where would be the proof? In order for them to be a witness of this, it had to have come from them. Why would I feel guilt about something someone else has done? I'm not guilty about Mary's ankle tattoo. I had nothing to do with it.
Although you should feel guilty about it.
No, but I'm not guilty about it. Just because I know it has nothing to do with me. I've got a friend with a tattoo. Oh, and I feel so guilty about it. I wish I was there before she did it and told her not to. This seems ridiculous. But I got a commercial for you, whiteys. I got the perfect commercial for you. How about this commercial? I think this commercial is just much more suiting. It's much more suitable. Let me just find my music here. I just want to find this real quick. I apologize. I did have it set up. It's not here.
Oh my God, please hurry. I'm like,
okay, here it is. Here's my
I'm dying here.
Here's my commercial to you. Use a little Outkast, my background. Hi, white folks. I'm lucky because I'm a nigger. The reason why is because everything you do against me will be held against you. Because I have black privilege. When I don't get a job, when I'm stopped by the cops, when I don't get a loan, I can always scream racism.
You can never scream that.
I can always scream profiling when I'm driving drunk down the road at 90 miles per hour in a Hyundai coming from a basketball game. And when I get my ass whipped by five cops, one of them black, I can always scream racism. Can you? I'm privileged because I'm a nigga. And I'd like to thank you for promoting that and letting me know. Had it not been for your racism, I'd have never known the nigga I truly was. Thank you for exposing I'm a nigga. That's it. Mary, I'm going to let you get the last 10 minutes.
I'm going to name one somewhere.
Oh, I know you're going to get more than that. And we'll let the guys in.
Oh, my God.
So
that was hilarious.
Mary wants to get into this whole campaign. Tell me where you have a problem about this, your white privilege.
Because these people are bugging. These people have lost their cotton-picking freaking minds.
Well, tell me where
Pardon the pun. They're crazy. What are you talking about? I'm sorry, I'm white, and I'm privileged. What privileges do we have? What privileges do white people have that black people don't have?
Well, apparently not being followed by security is a privilege.
What century do these people live in?
I don't know. But you don't get followed by security, so you have privilege. Oh, and don't forget, you can get a bank loan and a job faster.
You know what? As a matter of fact, I was just at the bank on Monday.
Yes, you were. And you got denied at the bank, didn't you?
But you didn't.
No, I didn't. That's right. I didn't get denied at the bank, but Mary did. Right?
So there goes those privileges.
Yeah, exactly.
So thank you.
So,
it's just absolutely insane. I cannot believe that these crazy, ignorant white people and black people involved are even promoting this. Are you kidding me? The president of the United States of America is
black.
And not only is he black, he's probably not even from this damn country.
Probably.
We won't promote that. So he's really black.
Okay, so wait. So here's the deal. What is your view on this white? Because I'm just looking at some of the things that they're saying that, you know, lucky that people see us not a color. What, you know, if people see you as Mary, they don't see you as a color. Who are these people? Are they suggesting that white people don't see, that black people don't see color? Are they suggesting
They must be, because and that's totally untrue, because I go through it all the time. I have black people all the time telling me,
but
girl, you ain't really white.
But
black.
They're the only people guilty of this. They're the only people who are guilty
and
of this.
And the whole, you know, in the world that I live in the world that I work in every day, I have black people that are way above me in my job.
Oh, you're black superiors.
Yeah, they're not my immediate superior is not black, but they hold higher positions in the company than I do.
Right.
And there are more black people that hold higher positions in the company than I do than there are white people.
Okay, so
that's not true.
Is there a strong possibility it was based upon their credentials?
Worked hard. They either came in, you know, into the position because of their credentials, or they were already in a position in the company and worked hard and got promoted. I've seen several black people in my company get promoted throughout the 3 years that I've been there.
But does this make you angry that people are telling you that you should feel guilty for your whiteness?
No, because they're ignorant. I'm not going to feel guilty for being white. I'm pigment challenged. I mean, God made me the way I was. What am I? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that God created me without any pigmentation. Hell, I wish I had some damn pigmentation so I could get a tan.
Well, I love this comment right here that was on a YouTube video. They say, are you friggin' kidding me? Privilege? Whites don't get a month dedicated to them for being white. Money for college because of skin color. And a host of other privileges, I will not feel guilty for the color of my skin. Shame on you for making these videos. I'm trying to figure out what's this privilege. And the privileges seem so infinitesimal.
I'm going to tell you what's some of these, what Peggy thinks that some of these privileges are that's involved in the unfair campaign.
Now, who's Peggy?
Peggy can't, I don't know who she is. She's some old white lady. Hold on. Let me just pull it up.
Okay, so this is the, Mary's going to the campaign background on this thing. I guess, okay, so.
So this is their mission.
Right.
Their mission is to raise awareness about white privilege in our community, to provide resources for understanding and action and facilitate dialogue and partnership that result in fundamental systemic change towards racial justice.
Right. And in order to, and there's a most important thing, in order to get racial justice in this country, they believe that that black people or other ethnicities should get the same rights that whites have. My question is, what are these rights that whites have that blacks do not?
Well, they're telling you that they can get accepted for a loan, accepted for a credit card.
Well, okay. Well, look at this. Another white girl that says on her nose it reads "granted privileges." Oh, great. I'm sorry. Hold on.
You're not going to be able to get to it. Don't close it.
No, I'm not. I'm just kidding. Oh, this is.
Yeah.
Okay, this is another video.
No, I don't
want
to.
You don't want this video?
No.
Okay, all right. So, I'm sorry. When I told you you were going to be in this, it was going to be difficult for me to get out of it. Let me just read what this white girl has on her face. "Granted privileges we don't even realize." So, I mean, what are these privileges? "We don't experience the daily disadvantages, the looks, the fear, the hassles that thrive in the unspoken world of white entitlement." What are these things? And I can't read this one because they're all so damn small. "Something as basic as the color of our skin
has shaped our lives.
Oh, shaped our lives, opened doors, put us at the head of the line." In what way?
I ain't got no damn head of no line. I don't know what line these hoes is on, but I'm not on it.
Hold on. Let me at least let the guys jump in while you're getting most of this stuff. And God, of course, the lines are getting flooded. Let's go to Mike in Florida. Mike, go ahead.
You know, man, I'm pretty white. Okay, I'm not gonna deny. I mean, I got a little flavor, but I'm pretty white. And the only place I can see where I have privilege being white, well, there's two. One, I can get a cab. No matter what time of day or night, I can get a cab. Ahmed will pull over and pick me up. You know why he'll pick me up and not some 22-year-old black guy?
Because
I'm not going to rob him.
Because of statistics.
Yeah, because I'm not going to rob his ass. I mean,
right.
It's not my fault that young black men rob cabbies.
Exactly.
You know, I didn't do that, and I get better service in a restaurant. You know why?
Because you tip?
Because black people don't tip. You might tip, but look, man, I waited tables for a while. That's not a lie. Black people don't tip.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, you know, I might walk around at 7-Eleven at night and nobody looks at me funny, but that's because I'm an unassuming, good-looking white guy. I'm not going to rob the place.
But you know what, Mike? But if you went into that same 7-Eleven, regardless of your skin color, if you went into that same 7-Eleven dressed like a hoodlum, or
yeah,
dressed like a trailer park trash,
I mean,
poor white guy.
When I was 17, I dressed like I was going to be in a heavy metal band. Right?
Okay.
I had long hair and I wore a jacket with a Megadeth patch on the back. It's like, you know, their mascot with the skull.
And I just
looked disreputable. And people looked at me funny, right? You know, but as far as getting over because I'm white, no. If anybody in the world has privilege, it's pretty weird.
That's right. That's the bottom line.
And other pretty women and good-looking men.
You gotta look apart. They don't think it has anything to do with that. They think it has to do with color, which shows you how backwards they are.
It's coming from Duluth, where there's no black people.
Exactly.
The population of black people is like 2%.
We'll take a break when we come back. We'll continue with this and we'll play the video again. It's Resetter Radio. Stick around. Top of the hour.
I'm here because I can't stand what's happening in this community.
Yes.
Yeah, and somebody has to make a change.
Yes.
Now, brother, will you help me?
Yes, I will.
I wish I could.
Damn it, man. I heard the People's Revolutionary Army was once 1,000 strong. Now, what happened?
They got government jobs.
The brothers walked in with guns, came out with jobs.
The brothers weren't mad anymore. Yes, Whitey is something else.
Reese on the Radio, top of the hour, right here on blogtalkradio.com. What am I saying? It's June the 21st. I'm looking at the number. June 21st, 2012. And we're talking about this this
crackertastic phenomenon that's going on.
Exactly. The Unfair Campaign, which has released a video about being white and privileged in this country, that I'm pretty sure that black folks are just going to be happy. They're just going to be happy somebody made this video. See, I told you. The white folks said it. Like, it's only true. I talked about this in jail often. You know, isn't it funny that black people only know it's true when white folks say it is? It's like the nigga can't know nothing. A black man tells you it's true. You go to the white man to find out if it's true. Like, the white man can only secure the veracity of the statement. No one ever believes the black man.
The white man puts the approval stamp.
Yeah, exactly. The white man gives the approval. White man gives the approval. That's amazing to me. But let's play the video. This is the Unfair Campaign public service announcement.
What do you mean we're lucky to be white?
It's not luck. It's privilege. We're privileged that people see us, not a color.
Privilege that we don't get stared at when we walk into the room.
Privilege that we don't get followed by security when we go shopping or pulled over when we're in the wrong neighborhood.
We're privileged because society was set up for us, and our silence keeps it in place.
We're privileged, and that's unfair.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Okay, so wait a minute. The one lady says, we're privileged because she says, or because we don't get pulled over because we're in the wrong
neighborhood.
Now let me tell you something.
What's the wrong neighborhood?
But no, hold up. Let me tell you something. I went down. Excuse me. I live in Virginia, and I drove into D.C., which is about 15, 20 minutes from here.
Mm-hmm.
Drove into D.C. was down at the wharf, if anybody knows about D.C., down at the wharf, in a neighborhood, in a drug-ridden neighborhood that was known to sell weed
right.
and crack and whatever else. A congressperson or one of the the District of Columbia's somebody from one of their political appointments pulled us over and was like, "What are y'all doing over here? You don't belong over here. I know what you're doing over here. I'm going to follow you to 395, and I want you to get back on the bridge and go back to where you belong. You don't belong over here. Go back to Virginia, and don't let me see you over here again."
Yeah, but, I mean, we shouldn't make this so myopic. I mean, I understand you've had experiences recently, but this is a broad, sweeping campaign that says we're all white, all privileged. All of you. All of them are. Anybody who ain't white, you don't have any privilege. That's what it is. Now, I'm going to go someplace here because I know how much trouble I'm going to get into for even bringing this man into the conversation, because he is going to agree with every word that these people say.
And he's going to be like, thank God for the white folks.
Yes, exactly, because he needs the white man to approve. He needs
his
the white
blackness.
Man to approve his blackness. That's right. He's the white folks are privileged. It's tough for me because I'm a black man in a white society. Derek the Brownie Hunter. You're on Reese on the Radio.
Tell me what's going on, Reese.
Aren't you happy these white folks have now confirmed that you are disenfranchised?
Well, hold on one second. You know, first of all, Reese, you know me. You know my background. Hold on one second. Mary, did you go to public school?
Yes, I did.
Hey, Mike, did you go to public school?
Hold on. Mike's not on.
I'm one of these rare black people that went to, you know, private school, okay?
Yes, you did.
My father worked on Wall Street for 28 years. You know what I'm saying? I mean, shoot. You know, if there's any black guy that should associate with white people, it should be me. But, you know, I'm just happen to be down with the brother.
Wait. You should associate with white people because your father worked on Wall Street and you went to private school? What is that, a standard?
But I'm sitting over here saying, you know, when he sits over here saying, a 22-year-old black guy should be threatened. And I'm like, hold on 1 second. I didn't steal. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, that's not me. You talk about a person that went on vacation every year. Hell, I live in Orlando because we used to go on vacation every other year.
Yeah,
Reese,
I know.
You're one of the people that my parents paid to babysit my dog when we went on vacation. Okay?
Yeah, I mean,
come on now. You know,
I can't stand
when people sit over here and stereotype black people, man, because I'm like, dude, like I said, you know, hey, I don't eat grits. I don't eat watermelon. You know what I'm saying? I can't stand when people sit over here and go ahead and stereotype black people.
So here's my question. Aren't you offended by this ad?
Oh, very. Because like I said, most of the white people I know went to public school and all this other crap. You know what I'm saying? So I mean, like I said, you know, what kind of black guy am I? You know what I'm saying? Am I an unusual black guy? you know this,
yeah.
My friends that I grew up with. You know the majority of the black guys that I grew up with, we didn't come from broken homes. Our parents, you know, lived together, and you know, my parents would still be together if my father didn't die. You see what I'm saying? I mean, shoot, you come on, you know Jericho, Chaz, Wesley, you know all my friends that grew up with. We all went to private school, so like that argument's utter nonsense. You know what I'm saying? I mean, come on.
You
need to move into the real world here. You know what I'm saying? I'm the changing face of America. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they need to get used to it. Black people are not poor, dude. You know what I'm saying? That's nonsense.
Derek, let Mike jump in. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, man, you're not going to like this philosophy I'm going to hit you with, okay? And don't get mad, okay? But
you know he's going to get mad.
But, yeah, you kind of have to look at young black men like you look at pit bulls, okay? They're not all bad. They're not even majority as bad. But the ones that are bad are really effing bad.
Yo, Mike, not only do I have a clean criminal background, hell, I got safe driver on my driver's license, dude. You know what I'm saying? I don't got no points on my license, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm just a different
type of black guy.
But again,
you have to look at things statistically. I mean, that's just how it is. It sucks for y'all.
Mike, in some sense, I think you're sort of agreeing with this group, Unfair Campaign, when you're saying that there's a sense of white privilege. I mean, in some ways,
No. It's not white privilege at all. It's I think some of the stuff they're saying actually happens, but I'm saying it happens for a reason.
But my thing is this, Mike. I can get 10 of my black friends to call you up, and we live the same kind of lifestyle. We're like I said, we didn't come from broken homes. You know what I'm saying?
I'm sure it is. And you know, the problem is that's not the image that's presented in the media.
There's just enough,
you know, of the stereotype that's out there to reinforce that stereotype.
But see,
let me interject here. Reese, you know Cabrera Heights. What is Cabrera Heights? Cabrera Heights is, I mean, it is what it is. It's the richest black neighborhood in America. Dude, that was the neighborhood right next to where I lived at, man. You know what I'm saying? That's where I majority of my friends.
Yes.
I mean, we were not poor black people, man.
No.
You know, I'm like, dude, I don't eat grits. I don't eat collard greens, man. I'm not that dope, man.
Okay,
Derek,
we understand that. Like, so.
But I didn't know what soul food was until I was 15.
Okay,
like,
wait a minute.
Okay, I gotta put him on hold. He's too passionate.
We understand that, and I definitely understand that because most of the. Now, I'm white, and I hung out with all black people. I mean, some of my girlfriends was white, and I had some black girlfriends too, but I hung out with mostly men, and they were all black. And mostly all my black friends came from better financial backgrounds, lived in homes, not apartments.
That is true.
Had a two-parent household.
Yep.
More of my black friends, excuse me, lived better in all aspects of their life than I did and most of my other white friends.
I think I was probably the poorest black person you knew at that time because I was practically homeless.
Well, yeah, you had to have been because Because Jamie, Kool-Aid Man, James Montgomery,
he lived in a house. Yeah, TJ, lived in an apartment with his mother and father.
We lived over a deli in a one-bedroom apartment. My mother slept on the couch.
Let's get Edward in here real quick. Edward,
we were collecting food stamps, I had Medicaid.
I'm going to let Derek back in a second. Edward, so you've heard the ad. What's your take on this? Because I saw you driving.
Oh, yeah, my take is, I think a lot like yours, I like to break things down by facts. Let's take one of the things they talked about, bank loans.
Right.
You know who, when you break it down racially, who gets approved for bank loans the most? Asians do.
Wow. Asians. I didn't know that.
So I'll send you the research when I get to a computer. If our system is set up to give white people an advantage, why the hell are Asians getting approved for bank loans more than whites and blacks? It's because they have better scores, better FICO scores.
Exactly.
And who do you think gets followed less in a store than an Asian guy? Nobody freaks out when an Asian guy walks in a store. You never hear anybody talk about that.
it's an interesting point you guys are making. That, you know, they're saying that and this is the part that really bothered me about we don't get noticed when we walk into a room. Well, I would say you're just not charismatic. You're kind of boring. What do you mean you don't get noticed when you walk into a room?
It depends on the room.
Yes, exactly.
I've walked into an all-black bar and I got noticed.
Yeah, what would it suggest? And what scenario are you talking about? We don't get noticed when we walk into a room. Well, what room are you discussing? Are we talking about maybe, maybe a Klan's meeting?
And it was, when I walked in the bar, it was like that scene from Animal House when Otis Day and the Night.
Oh, my favorite part of the movie!
Oh, my gosh.
Mary knows that. That's my favorite part of the movie
because
they play that song, Shama Lama Ding Dong. I love that freaking scene.
Oh, my gosh.
Can we dance with your dates?
Yeah. Love that. Scene. I watch it all the time. All right, let's bring JC in because he's got something to say. Go on. So, JC, are you agreeing with this ad?
I agree. I agree with the ad, but, I mean, I think you guys are looking at it from a different angle, and it kind of – I think in the beginning, you guys kind of really shocked me with it because you kind of pretend that it doesn't exist. I mean, you're talking about the area in which you've grown up in. That's your bubble, and there's a whole United States outside of that.
JC.
Now, why can't this video – Wait a minute, Mary. Why can't this video be about confession? Why can't it be about confession rather than guilt?
Well, I think it is confession.
What confession?
Yeah, no.
I don't need to hold on. Wait a minute.
No. It's about confession.
No. The people who are in the commercial are confessing.
He's got a legitimate question.
Right.
Hold on. He's got a legitimate question because what he's saying in this case is that the only thing he sees wrong with this video, and he's saying that these cases may be true, but what these people should be doing as opposed to saying all whites do it, what it should be is these whites confessing to their sins as opposed to suggesting all whites do it. Do I have you correct?
Exactly.
Right. And then, Mike, you brought up statistically. Statistically, there are only 48 million of us, and there's 39 to 240, so statistically – racism on the Caucasian side has to be more than on the African American side. So you really can't. Right. Well, no. Reese always makes the argument that blacks are far more racist than whites. When you can't be if you want to keep bringing in statistics. I mean,
okay,
Becky.
But wait a minute.
Hold on. Let me finish, Ray. Becky still to this day has to carry on with Antoine behind Daddy Ward Cleaver's back. Comedians joke about this thing. Yeah. Yes. Comedians still
there are so many dads who have been browbeaten with how dare you be offended that your daughter is a black guy that I don't think that's prevalent as you think anymore.
Yeah.
Listen,
okay.
comedians have joked about this for years, and that's why we laugh at it because we can identify with it. But I think more so like the video has a whole lot to do with more about confession. I've been in let's say in the corporate world. I've been passed over at least twice for someone who had less experience than I did at a company that I've been allowed, and I'm not going to mention the company's name, but at this company, I trained at least 15 people to do the same job that I did, but yet I couldn't supervise them.
Oh, now, now, wait a minute. My dad was a... Oh, go ahead, Mary.
JC, in response, listen, this whole racist issue, you know, it's... I've always said this, and I will keep to my belief. It is not really... Nothing that is going on is really about race, black, white, Hispanic, Asian. It's all about financial status, okay? Everything boils down to that because... That is what makes this world go round. Now, as far as Mike, well, actually, you go ahead and then I'll respond.
Well, you know, I don't really think that people, nobody gets discriminated against simply because of the color of their skin. And what I'm saying is nobody looks at, like, an Indian person, let's just say. I mean,
I can't believe that you think that that doesn't go on in this day and age.
Well, wait, hold on. Let him finish his point.
There's a reason, okay? When people look, and let's go with the 22-year-old black kid in the hoodie who walks into a convenience store.
Right.
They don't look at this kid and say, oh, he's bad because the color of his skin is black. They look at him and say, oh, well, you know, black people statistically do this stuff. That's why people are discriminated against because of their race. It's not simply because of the color of their skin. It's because of a historical pattern of behavior.
Yeah, and JC, I would make this argument, okay? If you were to take a scenario that worked like this, if you were to say a 22-year-old black kid dressed like Trayvon Martin was dressed the night he was killed, right? Hoodie, pair of cargo pants, you know, young, slim kid versus me and the way that I normally dress. I'm in, you know, maybe a polo shirt, a pair of slacks, you know, watch on, probably wearing like a gentleman's cap or nothing with my glasses on. I walk into a room. If we walk into two separate places, do you believe that people are looking at me when I walk in with an air of suspicion versus somebody like Trayvon Martin when they walk in, although we are two black people? Wouldn't my age play a factor? Wouldn't my manner of speech play a factor? Isn't my mannerisms a factor? Because in this day and age, when we have all of this constant hammering and yammering on about how we shouldn't discriminate, and how we also have this hammering in our minds, our collective minds, about how we should carry ourselves, our social wares, you know, how we should behave in public. And we know there are civilized and uncivilized ways to behave. That you know that a strong part of what it is that brings on what these people are talking about as far as racism has to do with each and every one of those factors. Not race. We're talking about mannerism, style of dress, definitely age, because the youth culture today is known to be, you know, rambunctious, a little unorthodox, probably a little obnoxious. So people are wary of that behavior of young people. I believe that more store owners get the same impression of a young white baggy pants wearing white kid than they do from a young black baggy pants wearing black kid today.
Skateboarders take a lot of time.
No. I beg to differ on that one. I beg to differ on that one because people, I put it to you like this. We got these goths walking around, these emo kids, and they're walking around with,
What the hell is that? Hold on, let me check and see. Oh, I think it was Edward. Go ahead.
Yeah. And you've got these goth kids, these emos walking around, and they're wearing that they're all black, even with the long black trench coats and things. And they even get harassed simply because of the way that they look.
But who are they harassed by? They're harassed by their own peers, their own kids who are their age.
They don't like the way that they dress. And I'm sure adults look at them, oh, what a shame, and this, that, and the other. And I'm thinking based on what happened up at Columbine, I think a lot of this has to do with how the media portrays individuals.
Especially because they're freaking weird.
What?
Because they're weird.
No.
They're a bunch of pasty-faced kids wearing black and gray striped stockings and Doc Martens.
Okay, now then.
Because they don't fit in. Because they're making a point to stand out from the norm.
Exactly.
You make a point. It's like in Australia, they call it the tall poppy syndrome.
What is,
if you stand out from everybody else, and say, if you're going to make yourself an obvious outsider, people are going to treat you like an outsider. Take it from a former metalhead with Sammy Hughes to have Sammy Hagar hair.
That's exactly the point, Mike. You hit it right on the head. If you, you know, there's this line in Pretty in Pink, as I always talk about, movies. Pretty in Pink's one of my favorite John Hughes films. It's definitely up there on the top five. But, you know, when Andy, played by Molly Ringwald, is in the office, I guess, of the principal or the dean, whatever it is, you know, when you send out signals that you don't belong, people are going to make sure that you know it.
Exactly.
You know, if you constantly send out signals that you don't belong, people are going to come after you about it. You know, if all you want to do is be different. If you're so busy telling people I'm different from you, if that's what you wear on your sleeve as some sort of badge of honor, don't be so stunned that people let you know about it.
Yeah,
that people treat you that way.
One of these politicians, it might have been that Frederica Wilson back during the early part of the Trayvon Martin thing when they brought up the subject of the hoodie, she actually said, well, young black men are so uncomfortable in our society that they use their hoodie as a suit of armor, and they'll put their hood up to hide.
That sounds like something she would say.
If you're going to put your hood up and hide yourself from me, I'm going to treat you with suspicion because people with masks are up to something.
I cannot believe that she actually said that. Is there audio available of that?
Are you kidding me? You can't believe that she said that?
No.
It might not have been her, but it was.
Hold on, go ahead.
It was her or Sheila Jackson Lee or one of those.
Sheila Jackson Lee, because I don't see something in an attempt to be profound would never come out of Frederica Wilson's mouth. Sheila Jackson Lee, was she in Texas, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Sheila Jackson Lee. That sounds exactly like something she would say. That
you know,
I mean, question it.
My best friend in high school was our school valedictorian, okay? The guy's name was Jamal. Jamal was the son of two educators, and he was pretty much, he sounds like me, okay? We had the same vocal inflections, the same rejection of the Cajun accent. He dressed like a preppy, you know, he looked, you know, polo shirts and khakis and nobody looked at Jamal with any suspicion when he went anywhere. He had no trouble at all. But some of the dudes back in the 80s with Jerry curls, because it was the era of the Jerry curl.
Right.
If you walk into a store with your wave cap on or whatever, you know, people are going to look at you funny. Yeah. You've made that bad. You got a lion.
It's funny because you say that, because I believe that if you've decided to dress the way of a particular group of people, if you decided that it's not like you're some dumbass, it's not like you don't know, hey, if I wear my pants hanging off my ass, that's a popular culture reference with gangsta. You know,
mm-hmm.
If I braid up my hair or put a tattoo on my arm, you know, or if I wear a certain style of sneaker, if I walk a certain kind of way, if I talk a certain kind of slang, I know that that is identified as being tough and down, that
but
I am associating myself with criminality. And then when you come out, you wear that, and then you wonder, why are people associating me with criminality, knowing damn well that that's what you set out to is assimilate?
Yeah, I mean, let me ride a Harley and wear, you know, a denim vest with patches on it and long hair and greasy chaps and see if cops don't think I have methamphetamine.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, if you believe that that's – you just said it. You know, you got to make your bed. You know, you make your bed, you got to lie in it, especially if the fact that you decided that that's the way that it is that you want to look. If you know that that's the way you want to look, it's not like you haven't investigated as how that look is perceived in the public – I mean, in society or in the norm or in mainstream. It's not like you don't know. you've decided to be a part of a statistic or a part of a group. You made that conscious decision. You don't want to be judged by it.
Whether
don't
it's right,
do
it. Wrong, or indifferent, that there are groups, that
yeah.
is just what it is.
Yeah, but you know, but no. You may say that it's not right that people are broken up into groups, but if you decide to look like a group, then you're part of the problem. You can't blame me for the prejudices you've chosen to be a part of.
I look like a cop. You know, I'm a 5'7" muscular white guy with a shaved head. You know how hard it is for me to find weed?
You know what I say? You know, remember that line that Dave Chappelle said on his he did a show in San Francisco, and he was talking about a woman dressed in a horse in horse clothes.
Oh yeah.
Remember
exactly.
when he says that joke? And he says the whole thing about, you know, well, what if I put on a police uniform? You know, and you ran up to me and said, oh, police officer, he's arresting his president. Just because I have on a uniform doesn't mean that I'm a cop. So, you know, the bottom line is that you may not be a whore, but you're wearing a whore's uniform. You may not be a thug, but you're wearing a thug's uniform.
You know, I'm not a big fan of Carlos Mencia, okay, because he steals jokes. But
don't
Carlos
know,
had
I
a bit.
Not a fan. Go ahead.
Carlos had a bit about going to visit his mom. He says mom lived in a predominantly Hispanic kind of middle-class neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And he was driving there in his $100,000 Mercedes. He said the cops stopped him. And the cop said, you know why I stopped you? And Carlos said, yeah, because I look like this and I'm driving this car in this neighborhood. You think I'm a drug dealer. Thanks for stopping me.
Yeah,
you know,
much.
Thanks for taking the neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. Let's let Edward in before we take a break. Edward, I'm sorry. You obviously had some difficulty with the phone. Did you want to add something new? I'll let you get to that last word.
No. I'm good right now.
Oh, okay.
I'll stay on for the next segment.
Okay. All right. Stick around, folks. I've got some more stuff to bring up. I've often talked about this. I don't know why people continue to do it and why people will not fight it. When we come back, there's a new film that's apparently been greenlit, and they've decided to attack Jesus Christ. When you find out what this movie is going to suggest about the Virgin Mary and about Jesus Christ, I promise you, you will be stunned. And it's probably going, well, it'll probably be a bomb. But it's going to be May. Hollywood at its best. We'll be back. It's Streets on the Radio.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the 5 states where Obama is attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues
and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
But our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward. And the state of our union is strong.
3 years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours, a great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reason Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com. What is a boy to do?
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
Come on, players, stop hating, stop participating. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby, twinkle, twinkle.
Thing about the white privilege thing. Mary just brought something to my attention. Now I'm going to turn the volume down so we don't have to hear the actual audio. But according to this group, Unfair Campaign.
According to Peg, this Peggy
is a
lady,
woman
this is
named,
her story.
Okay, this is Peggy, telling her story. And she lists how many?
50 reasons on how her whiteness has given her privileges.
Okay. All
right. And just number one on the list is, I can, if I wish, arrange to be in the company of people of my race most of the time. So that's one of the privileges for her to be white. I can avoid spending time with the people whom I was trained to mistrust and who have learned to mistrust my kind or me. If I should need to move, I can be pretty sure of renting or purchasing housing in an area which I can afford and in which I want to live. I can be pretty sure that my neighbors in such a location will be neutral or pleasant to me. And Crackertastic goes on to say, I can go shopping alone most of the time pretty well assured that I will not be followed or harassed. I can turn to the television or open the front page of the paper and see people of my race widely representative. When I'm told about our national heritage or about civilization, I'm shown that people of my color made it what it is. I can be sure that my children will be given curricular materials that testify to the existence of their race. If I want to, I can be pretty sure of finding a publisher for this piece on white privilege. I can be pretty sure of having my voice heard in a group in which I am the only member of my crackertastic race.
Wow.
I can be casual about whether or not to listen to another person's voice in a group in which he or she is the only member of his or her race.
I don't even understand that.
I mean, neither. I can go into a music shop and count on finding the music of my race represented, into a supermarket and find the staple foods which fit my cultural traditions, into a hairdresser shop and find someone who can cut my hair.
Really?
When I use checks, credit cards, or cash, I can count on my skin color not to work against the appearance of my financial reliability.
What?
It's unbelievable. I can arrange to protect my children most of the time from people who might not like them. I don't even get that.
She's out of her mind.
I do not have to educate my children to be aware of systemic racism for their own daily physical protection.
Okay.
Like, how racist is that?
Yeah.
I can be pretty sure that my children's teachers and employers will tolerate them if they fit school and workplace norms. My chief worries about them do not concern others' attitudes towards their race. I can talk. Oh, this is hilarious. Number 17. So this is this lady's 50 reasons of why her whiteness has made her privileged. I can talk with my mouth full and not have people put this down to my color. What the? Like, what are you talking about?
Are you serious?
I'm serious. It says it right there. And she says that she wrote this stuff down. She would be sleeping. Pause this. She'd be sleeping in the middle of the night, and she would wake up in the middle of the night and write stuff down as it came to her head. So these are all, like, 50 things that came to her head. I can, and this is crazy, too, number 18. I can swear or dress in secondhand clothes or not answer letters without having people. Okay, I'm going to start over because you need to really listen to this. I can swear, so I can curse, or dress in secondhand clothes or not answer letters without having people attribute these choices to the bad morals, the poverty, or the illiteracy of my race.
This is just crazy.
Number 19, I can speak in public to a powerful male group without putting my race on trial. I can do well in a challenging situation without being called a credit to my race.
These are things that they do. These are the things that liberals do.
I can't even read anymore. We've got to go to other matters. This is just absolutely,
it's scary to even read some of
this. It's insane if you go, there's more, she's crazy.
And we're only at
20.
Yeah. Well, I can do well in
a challenging situation without being called a credit to my race.
Okay, so we're at 20. So if she's got 50.
She goes on to even mention how she can go to the store and buy Band-Aids or cover-up. That would appeal to her, to the sheer tone of her skin color. And that's a privilege, because, you know, black people can't go and get Band-Aids the same color of their skin.
Apparently not. No thanks. We got it. We'll probably read.
But you can get makeup. You can get cover-up and stuff. They have a whole line of black beauty makeup.
Okay. All right. I want to go into this story. This is an article written by Warner Todd Hutton on Breitbart.com. You can read it in the big Hollywood section of Breitbart. The title reads, "So much for Hollywood's days of the sweeping Bible epic." Director and author Paul Verhoeven has announced that he's found the financial backing to produce a film on the Christian Messiah that will contend that Jesus was just a good politician, one born after his mother was raped by a Roman soldier, but a man most certainly not the Son of God. Trust me, the story gets better, even though I've given you the whole crux. Verhoeven, most famous for having brought moviegoers the 1987 smash hit RoboCop, is looking to begin filming his newest flick based on his own book, Jesus of Nazareth. That 2008 book dismisses the Bible's chronicling of miracles performed by Jesus Christ, not to mention asserting that Jesus' birth was less than immaculate. The book suggests that Jesus was the result of Mary being raped by a Roman centurion. Verhoeven also claims to debunk the fact that Judas, one of the 12 disciples, betrayed Jesus to Roman authorities just previous to the crucifixion. In 2008, Bill Donahue, the president of the Catholic League, called Verhoeven's book laughable. He said, "Here we go again with idle speculation grounded in absolutely nothing," Donahue told Fox.com. "He has no empirical evidence to support his claim, which is why they say may have." This isn't the first time Verhoeven has plumbed a Christ narrative. In 2010, the director admitted that he intended the main character in RoboCop to be a Christ-like figure. I've never heard this.
And I would have never even looked at the thing.
But look how he makes his case. The point of RoboCop is, of course, that it is a Christ story. It's about a guy that gets crucified after 50 minutes. After 50 minutes, and then is resurrected the next 50 minutes, and then is like the super cop of the world. But it is also a Jesus figure as he walks over water at the end. That's right, because at the end, you know that last scene, he walks through water. He can walk over the water and say this wonderful line, which is basically to Clarence Boddicker, "I am not arresting you anymore," meaning "I'm going to shoot you." And that is, of course, the American Jesus.
Oh, my God.
Verhoeven also asserted that RoboCop meant to portray the United States as a bad, destructive place, one that is rotten to the core, a favorite Hollywood theme. In 2010, Verhoeven also attacked Mel Gibson's 2004 film, The Passion of the Christ, scoffing at the notion Jesus died for our sins. Though Verhoeven denies Christ's divinity, he still says he greatly respects Jesus Christ's ethics. If you look at the man, it's clear you have a person who was completely innovative in the field of ethics. My own passion for Jesus came when I started to realize that it's not about miracles. It's not about a new set of ethics, an openness towards the world, which was anathema in a Roman-dominated world. I believe he was crucified because they felt that politically he was a dangerous person whose following was getting bigger and bigger. Jesus' ideals are about the utopia of human behavior, about how we should treat each other and how we should step into the shoes of our enemy. Verhoeven's new Jesus film joins several other Bible-based films already in the work. Director Darren Aronofsky's Noah Project has already been greenlit. And a pair of movies based on the biblical figure Moses are also moving forward in Hollywood. So, Mary, Virgin Mary, is raped, and Jesus
is
a politician. Oh, my God. Where?
Sound like an episode of SVU to me.
It sounds like an SVU, right? Law and Order SVU. Oh, goodness.
Lord Jesus Christ SVU.
Well,
so wait.
The whole RoboCop was supposed to depict Jesus Christ.
It's never would I have made that assessment at all.
Well, like, what are you talking about?
Go ahead, Mike.
So, Donahue from the Catholic League says that Verhoeven's book has no empirical evidence.
Right.
So basically what he's saying is that Verhoeven's fairy tale is not believable, but fairy tale he believes in is totally credible.
Oh, why?
And has empirical evidence.
I knew you were going to say that.
And I agree with you. You know what, Mike? I agree with you on that.
There is more proof of Santa Claus than Jesus. Okay?
Wow.
There is, honestly, he was a real guy. We can prove Kris Kringle was a real guy. You can't prove Jesus. And we all read the King James Bible, but man, the Bible was translated and retranslated to fit political means for centuries.
Okay, so Mike, let me ask you a personal question. Do you believe in Jesus Christ?
Hell no. I believe in, here's what I thought. I'll debate religion with anybody who will look through a telescope with me.
Okay, so how do you think that we got here?
Well, we're about to go off in another tangent. I got other guys who want to
just answer that one question. What is your theory of how, do you believe in the Big Bang Theory or?
You know, I don't think anybody knows, but I don't believe in a... all-powerful figure who made it all in 7 days and sent his hippie son down here to get nailed up on a cross.
But do you believe in, like, a higher being? Somebody somewhere, something somewhere had to create all of this, right?
Don't know.
Okay.
We don't know. It could be anything. We could all be the, we could be in the Matrix for all we know.
Oh, I got to let the other guys get in here. Mike appears to be a non-believer, gentlemen, but let's just deal with this.
Mike,
with...
are you the Antichrist? No,
no
I'm kidding.
Not.
I'm kidding.
Let's just deal with the movie. We'll deal with that subject at another time. I'm so much hurt by this. Anyway, so...
That's a pretty good Fire Marshal Bill impression.
Yeah, I know. Guys, RoboCop. Christ-like?
Well, now that you mention it, I can see it, yeah.
Are you serious?
It was death and resurrection. I mean, a lot of movies have Christ-like themes. It's not exactly an uncommon theme for a movie. I mean, The Matrix is a Jesus story.
Okay, Edward, do you care to chime in?
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I mean, if you're going to say resurrection means someone is Christ-like, then you can say that Jason Voorhees is Christ-like because he came back from the dead, or Freddy Krueger, or any movie figure who came back from the dead. I don't agree with that comparison at all.
Well, yeah, I agree with that, too. It's frightening.
Well, isn't Derek with us?
Yeah, Derek, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Derek, you're not a non-believer. Come on, man.
No. I mean, first of all, when you sit over here and say Jesus didn't exist, didn't his dad go to Bethlehem for the census? You know what I'm saying? So I'm pretty sure there are, records of this guy being alive.
There was no written records of it.
It's all a myth, man. The census. You know? He had to go back to the city of David for the census. So, like I said, there's records of this guy being alive, okay? Now,
the Jesus story is exactly the same as the Egyptian story of Paul.
There's a record of this guy being alive.
Wait, are we suggesting,
we're not suggesting that there's no record of Jesus Christ existing, are you, Mike? Mike, are you saying that there's no historical
I'm saying that the Egyptians have a story that is exactly like
but
the Jesus down to the letter.
This is the Roman Empire, man, not like, you know.
And the Egyptians, the Egyptians predate the Roman Empire by thousands of years.
You remember the Roman Empire, right? You remember the Roman Empire?
The Egyptians, Derek. The Egyptians predate the Roman
Empire.
I'm gonna stop. The Egyptians predate. The Egyptians predate the Roman Empire by thousands of years.
The Romans were like recent, man. They weren't like a real long time.
But dude, what I'm saying is, it's a myth. Because the Egyptians had the exact same story.
Michael, you're again dealing with one core fact. I understand what you're saying about the I've read this story as well, that there are Egyptian figures. In fact, it's Horus, right?
It's Horus, yeah. It's exactly the same.
Right. Horus' story, in fact, there's an Indian, is also an Indian historical figure.
That all predate the Jesus story by thousands of years.
Hold on, Derek. They were all born of a virgin, has 12 disciples. It's a very similar story to the Jesus Christ story. Okay, that's fine. If you want to make that distinction, that okay, there are a lot of similarities in the story of Jesus Christ as far as his miracles and all this other stuff. The 12 disciples appear to be a myth. But what I'm asking you is, as a historical figure, Jesus Christ is or is not fact. As an existing person. That's all we're asking.
Well, I haven't seen a corpse. I haven't seen a grave site. And
dude,
we don't have any records that were written when he was around. All of this stuff was written hundreds and thousands of years after he supposedly died. So it fits the very definition of a myth.
There are records of his father.
No, there are not records. There are no written records from when the man was alive.
I guess Julius Caesar isn't real either, huh?
Julius Caesar was real. Jesus has no proof of Jesus being real.
Are you sure of that?
As far as Julius Caesar is concerned, there's plenty of things that were written within his time frame where he was alive, and as well as other countries that also know that that wrote things that he did.
But there's nothing written at the time that Christ was supposedly alive. Christ doesn't show up in a Bible for hundreds of years.
And with this, I think this is easily verifiable. If Derek would, bring up some, facts, we can easily verify or deny this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, Derek is suggesting that, Derek's not suggesting Jesus Christ is in a census record, but he is suggesting that David, if there is a historical record of his father's existence. So, therefore, Derek is now equating that with, if David existed, then Jesus must have. Fair to say, Derek? What you're saying here?
Yes.
Okay. So, Derek.
David, man. It's a written record, man.
Okay, so a written record of David's existence doesn't exactly.
But wasn't his father Joseph?
Joseph,
yeah.
My apologies.
Descendant of David, man.
So you're saying that the descendants of David immediately makes Joseph, therefore, a part of public record. But the question is there any public record of Joseph?
Yes. Listen, like I said, the Bible specifically tells you this man had to take
the
trip.
But the Bible's not a historical record. The Bible was something that was passed down through oral tradition for hundreds of years before it was written down. And then rewritten and rewritten by whatever king was in power at the time. It's called the King James Bible, for crying out loud.
Listen, bottom line, it's an awesome book of awesome stories, but I don't think it's a book for which we should be or should use as a guide for life.
Yeah,
I mean, the Bible begins with the book of Genesis and God creating the earth in 6 days and rest on the seventh and this, this, that, and the other. And I've read the Bible and I've studied in Seventh-day Adventist, Jehovah's Witness, I was baptized Baptist, Yeah, I can't find anything in the Bible that relates to a dinosaur, yet we keep finding their relics. And how do you write stories from back then and not include a 40-foot lizard chasing you?
Hold on one second now. When you look at the Bible, it tells you that when you open it up to Genesis, what does it say on top? It says the book of Moses. So for all we know, the Bible does start with Moses, man. Remember, he had 40 years in the desert. He didn't have nothing else to do, and he was probably the only educated people out of these damn Hebrews running out of Egypt. So he had nothing else to do with writing the first five chapters of the Bible. So the Bible starts with Moses. That's definitely.
We did a whole show to dedicate this one because, man, I've got theories.
There's Israeli anthropologists who have come up with a theory that the Bible was written by ancient Hebrews who were whacked out on psychedelic plants that grow in the desert.
Oh, man. You know, he go to
and a lot of the things that are in the Bible are highly reminiscent of hallucinogenic trips, like blazing, like burning bushes and voices from the sky. Mm-hmm. It's highly possible they were all whacked out on peyote.
That's true, Mike, because you know what? Like, I don't even know what you guys are talking. Like, I have no idea who David is. You know, I was raised Catholic. I can't remember anything I ever learned. I went to the church up until, you know, I was about 13 every, like, weekend, every Sunday, whatever. I can't remember any of that because, really, I believe in a higher being. I have my relationship with
you
my
guys
higher
work.
Being. What?
Catholics are the worst.
Whatever.
Oh, man, come on now, dude. Don't even go there, man.
Whose very basis talks about talking serpents and a man giving up the rib to make a woman.
To me, if you're promoting this loving soul, this God, that if you believe in religion and all that and in the Bible, you're promoting this loving God that forgives for all, that died on a cross for your sins, then how can you relate an unconditional love to that? You promote that that God unconditionally loves you, yet people run around that promote that judge you. It just doesn't even make any sense to me.
Well, what man does with the Bible is completely separate of what the
Bible
is.
Well, but the Bible is written by man, so how can you believe it?
Okay, go ahead.
And then you sit over here, you talk about the Catholics are the worst. You know, I don't see any Baptists having hospitals for AIDS patients, but I see the Catholics have that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
I also don't see him covering up for child molesters.
Show me Oral Roberts.
Exactly. You don't hear him covering up for child molesters or denying the fact that Jesus Christ would have a child.
You know why I'd be offended about that? Because I grew up in New York and we didn't have none of that go down. You know what I'm saying? Not where I grew up at.
I got to pause, you know? Everybody, for the last thing. So let me just say this. Let me say this. Mike, I know you brought up the whole child molester thing. I know, you know, people bring that up all the time. Let me just say one thing about that. I got to get the final word in on this, okay? Whatever it is that you believe or you don't believe, for that matter, that's fine. That's fair and all, okay? But when people start bringing up that child molester thing about the Catholic Church, I have one issue with that. It's because all anyone ever said after September 11th, is that you can't blame an entire people for the actions of about a dozen on September 11th. Yes, there were radical fundamentalists out there. There were radical fundamentalists who wanted to cause death to the West. According to statistics, Muslims in this country who are radical fundamentalists who want to end the West only make up 7% of the entire Muslim population. That works out to 1.7 million people. But yet we are not supposed to blanket all of them as radicals. Now, we are not going to take, and we can't take, the sexual indiscretions of those who are in the Catholic Church and, you know, those priests who were clearly perfect and now say, oh, it's an entire indictment of the entire Catholic Church. But we can't blame all Muslims for September 11th. Can't have it both ways, guys. Just can't do it. But believe or choose not to believe. But I don't know if you should go so far as saying that the Virgin Mary was raped just because you don't believe. I mean, raped? That's pretty heavy. I mean, you have to agree on that. This guy's going to make a movie suggesting that the mother of Jesus Christ would make, I mean, she was a rape victim. I don't know about that. I mean, that's worse than the elephant dung episode back in the day at the Brooklyn Museum of Art. This week on the radio, for Derek Johnson, thank you. We love you. Join us, it's Reese on the radio.